All right, Tuesday night, after a long weekend, we're back on the Fan pregame. Ailish and Justin, plenty to get into on the show tonight. A rare off night on Stanley Cup playoff games as we fuel up for the conference finals. Dallas Eakins is going to join us in a few minutes, help us break down those matchups.
Yeah, I'm not into it. These off nights can't have.
You need a little, like, breath.
I don't need a breath. Okay. I want to keep going till the very end. Blue Jays, though, of course, in the throes of a very critical stretch, one that might determine the future of Blue Jays superstars. BNS in about a half hour to take the temperature on the Blue Jays, who are gunning for a little win streak here.
I was going to say, I was at the Blue Jays game yesterday, which they won, and I finally got to sit in the outfield new bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
God, my neck is feeling great today. No craning involved. I was staring straight at the play the whole time.
There you go.
Very, very pleased. And the cup holders are dynamite. Last Friday, we were on before the long weekend. We had the breaking news of the Craig Berube signing as Leafs' newest head coach. We broke that down with Elliot Friedman. But today, we'll get a chance to look through one that Maple Leafs officially announced him today at the press conference. We'll have some first impressions later on the show.
And because we get a break in the action, we can break down the series prices for the conference finals and the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we'll look at Conn Smythe best bets, maybe cup handoff best bets. A lot to go through as we take this breather.
All right. So it's a rare night off, as we mentioned, before we start the Stanley Cup conference finals. Tomorrow will be the Panthers and the Rangers. It'll be a big one on Oilers and Stars. Of course, Canada's Cup hopes just solely on the Oilers. They found a way to make that one happen. Mm-hmm. I'm 4-for-4 for my finalists.
You are. That's pretty impressive. Your bracket is fully intact. I'm just
missing.
It's not
missing, busted yet, but
I think the Rangers that I'm missing. Yeah, I think I had Carolina going through. But yeah, it's really great that we have a Canadian team, of course, in the conference finals. I will say, though, before we, you know, forget about the Vancouver Canucks for 3 or 4 months until next year, awesome to see the Vancouver Canucks back.
Yeah.
That fan base reignited, that barn reignited. That team is very, very fun to watch. They put it maybe a little bit too much in the conservative bin yesterday in Game 7, but the Vancouver Canucks are fully back, and it was a lot of fun tracking them two rounds. Let's bring in our first of two guests today, Dallas Eakins, former NHL head coach with Anaheim and Edmonton. Of course, he'll be in tune with what's going on with the Oilers. What's going on, Dallas?
Not much, actually. Just been running around. I'm going to go meet some friends in Dallas for the first two games.
Okay.
All right. I got to get down to Dallas. I mean, this is going to be a really fun series to watch. We'll start with that one, and we'll start with the Dallas Stars in general, because I think they're – we're going to talk a little bit of head coaching with you, of course. That's your specialty. But the way that I see what the Stars have done is depth. And I know that's not always about the head coach. You know, he's not the one drafting the players and getting them in order. But I do think a lot of credit goes to how the Dallas Stars deploy that depth and give everybody a responsibility, and it's executed. Do you see that being maybe one of the biggest advantages they have in this series, is they have the players who are all firing from top to bottom, first line, fourth line, and on the back end too?
Yeah, in the NHL, a lot of times it's you coach the players that you're given, and I think Jim Neal has just done a wonderful job there of building that team. I know Pete DeBoer very, very well. He's an excellent coach. I know there's a lot of chatter out there sometimes about, you know, when Pete got hired there, it's like, oh, well, he's been on all these teams. They're just reshuffling the deck. Pete is an excellent, excellent coach. And I agree with you. The depth through that lineup and the right mix of skill, some heaviness, and a wee bit of anger, it all comes together nicely. And I think that team is just built for the playoffs.
Yeah, depth is definitely one of their strengths. They've got a really good goaltender. They've got a number one defenseman, that's for sure. They've got some emerging talent. But everyone kind of comes back to the depth. What makes it a different challenge for Edmonton? Like, how do you draw parallels and differences when gauging Edmonton's challenge here compared to the one they just overcame in the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I do think it will be similar, although in the same breath, a little bit different. I think Dallas just plays a heavier game, a wee bit meaner game. I think they're better defensively than Vancouver was. You know, they really pride themselves on team, and sometimes giving up a little bit individually for the greater of the group. So I do think it's a wee bit of a different animal, I think as you move down the lineup, the matchups from Edmonton can get a wee bit worrisome. I fully expect, obviously, Leon and Connor to get their fair minutes. But this may be a series where they may have to even play more.
So I think Rick Tocchet's probably going to be accepting a Jack Adams tomorrow night. I believe that's when the decision will be made on that. But, you know, obviously he's done a great job with the Vancouver Canucks. He turned around a franchise. He got players to be, as one, as a collective, very, very effective. And he brought out the best in a lot of individuals, of course. But I want to know what you made of his performance in Game 7 in the series versus Edmonton specifically, because yeah, that team, you know, maybe they're not built to be defensive juggernauts like maybe Dallas can be, but they certainly prioritized that, I thought, in Game 7. I thought it was conservative to have, you know, just a handful of shots through two periods against the Oilers was a little bit, maybe not misguided, but maybe misplaced in terms of the strategy going into that game. Like, what did you, was it just a necessity for Tocchet to try and make the a game that comes down to one goal, one scoring chance? Or do you think there was some mishandling of Game 7?
No, not at all. Hey, Rick Tocchet has just done a phenomenal job there. Like, incredible, incredible job. He's an incredibly inspiring guy for me. Like, Tocchet's first two times through with his first two teams, it didn't go well. And here he is on his third one, and he's doing extremely well. You know, a lot goes into these, hey, what was the game plan? Why did the team only have two shots? Like, you know, I'm sure that was not Rick Tocchet's game plan. I think everyone forgets a lot of the time that there's another team out there. I think losing Bessner there for the last game would have an impact on the team as well. And you know what? Everybody talks about home ice advantage. And sometimes those game sevens, they are easier just to play on the road. You can go out there and play free and have at it. And although Vancouver's fan base is just incredible, like it is just an amazing place to go in there and be part of a game. I think a lot weighs on the shoulders of those young men going out there to try to win that game seven in front of their home fans.
All right, so when we look at these series across all the four remaining teams, you got a lot of really famous, familiar NHL head coaches. You got Paul Maurice, Peter Laviolette. We talked about the Dallas Stars. And then you have, you know, Chris Knobloch. And I think it's really interesting to see his progression in one season, or not even a full season, with the Edmonton Oilers. Was hired back in November, and that team was in a real bad spot. Now they're in the conference finals against the Dallas Stars. Like, how do you evaluate and see growth in a guy like Chris Knobloch, who came in and maybe with the help of some superstars getting healthy, found a way to get this team ultimately one series away at this point from being in a Stanley Cup final? Like, how do you start to evaluate the work that he's done for the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, he's done an amazing job. All these guys have done great jobs. All the teams, the players, the managers, everyone's done a great job to get to where they're at today. The thing that I love looking at is the one thing that Chris doesn't have on him yet, he doesn't have those battle scars. Like, you know, it's his first year in the league. His hair still looks nice. His skin looks great. He looks healthy. And then when you start looking at those other guys, when you look at like whether Rick Tocchet or you look at Paul Maurice or Pete DeBoer or Lavi, they've been through some wars. They've been gutted a few times. They've coached so many games in the league. You know, they've got a lot of scars on them. And so super happy for Chris. I don't know him at all other than just having a quick text message exchange after he got the job. Everything that I've heard about him, he's just an incredible, incredible human being. And to come into that market with the expectation where it was, like, that's a lot to carry as a coach. And I think he's just done an amazing job at managing the personalities there, managing the expectation of just an absolutely fabulous fan base who are so hungry for a cup. And obviously managing the expectations of management. I think the one great thing he does have there around him, though, like, you know, Kenny Holland's got a lot of experience. I think that Jeff Jackson hiring was an incredible one for the Edmonton Oilers. So I think he is well surrounded by experience.
So he might not have the scars, plural, but he might have a scar after what was going on late in Game 7 last night. And there's nothing you can do. I imagine that was a helpless feeling as the Oilers were not trying to give it away, but Vancouver was definitely pushing, and that result could have been different, and the result could have been pretty catastrophic for the Oilers if Vancouver was able to get a third last night and, I guess, a fourth to win the game. What's it like being a coach in that situation where everything is under control and you're about to accomplish a certain goal or you're about to have an important victory and it starts to get away from you? Like, what can you do as a coach in that? Or do you just have to trust on what you've done, the hay being in the barn, I guess, as it goes in those moments?
Well, I think you really got to trust your, especially your leadership group. But all of these things that you talk to your team about, always, like I'm a big one on like staying neutral, right? It's when it's positive, be positive. But never, ever be negative. Like negative will burn down a church. It'll kill a family. It'll like crush a company. So you don't want any negativity. So like just being neutral, understanding it's a, I think the best way to put it is like, it's like you're in an eye of a hurricane sometimes, and you have to be calm in that moment. Now, that stuff's easy to say. I think you talk to your team about whatever mindset that you want for your team. But in those moments when it gets like that last night, you really have to just really rely on your players. There's not a whole bunch that you can say to totally calm the waters. You can try, and I think coaches can be a calming voice or sometimes an inspirational voice or a kick in the butt voice. But when that was going on last night, there's a couple of things going on sometimes. Number one is, how long can you hold your breath? And secondly, you start looking up at that clock in those moments and you swear to God they've stopped the clock. Mm-hmm. It's like no time is ticking off. It's like, clock, please go down. Please go down. So I will say this. In those moments, sometimes it's way better to be sitting on your couch watching it with a glass of wine than standing back there.
No NHL games on the network tonight, as everyone gets a day off, but tomorrow we get game one between the Panthers and the Rangers. I want to ask you about the advantage that maybe Peter Laviolette has. He's the only coach in these final teams that has won a Stanley Cup, which was obviously with Carolina a little while back. Like, how much of a advantage does that give somebody leading a team to ultimately to hopefully a Stanley Cup? And does that start to play in now when you get to playing with injured players, playing through a couple series where the going gets tougher? You got to find a way to keep to inspire your players. Like, is that when that card is played, and is that when it's the most valuable?
Well, there's probably not much Pete hasn't seen, right? Like, you know, everything that comes with the playoffs and situations or game sevens or being down in a game or being way up in a game, whatever it is, he's experienced it, and he's going to be able to use that experience to help his team and to guide his team. The one thing that's really interesting, I just saw this stat, or I heard it, I can't remember where I got it from, but like, it's really hard. There's very few, I think there's been two or three, you'll have to look it up, of coaches who have won the Stanley Cup with different teams. So the odds are actually quite against him, if you look back through history, to win a cup with a separate team. You know, and the guy he's going up against, Paul Maurice, like, I'm not sure there's many more well-versed in not only the tactics of hockey, but handling emotions, inspiring players, having a good laugh when things are hard. I think that's going to be a wonderful one to watch, just from the back and forth with two very, very experienced coaches.
Chatting with Dallas Eakins, head coach and general manager of Adler Mannheim, and of course, former head coach of the Oilers and Ducks. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Maurice next, because I feel like there's something, you know, in every career, right? There, you feel like you're at your best at some point, and I don't know if Paul Maurice feels that way. But I think there might be something fortuitous to him being in the position he's in now, where he might be at least the most experienced he's ever been. And he's coaching a team that is ultra talented, of course, is the betting favorite to win the Stanley Cup, or at least the second favorite. And a team that is playing in a market that may be easier to be your best self or the best version of yourself in. You've coached in both Anaheim and Edmonton, and maybe you thought you were more experienced in Anaheim than you were in Edmonton, but is there something to say for a coach like Maurice, you know, learning what he learned in Winnipeg and being able to apply all that wealth of knowledge in a market and for a team like Florida where, yeah, there are less consequences maybe if you slip up saying something because there's less media. Do you think that that's a factor working in Paul Maurice's favor right now where, yeah, wealth of experience and a team in a market where you can be that person?
Yeah, it certainly helps during the season. So, like, Paul Maurice is one of my – so, like, I love Paul Maurice. He's a great friend. He's the first guy that I ever worked with as a coach. He was the head coach of the Marlies, and I was the assistant coach in my first year of ever coaching. Then I got to coach with him at the Leafs, and I am very biased about this man. Mm-hmm. The way he's able to – deal with the media. Like every conference he had in Toronto, I'd be just around the corner listening to how he spoke, how he delivered things. He is incredibly quick on his feet. And the one great thing about working in a non-traditional hockey market is that you can just go about your business a lot and make your decisions and not be just asked about every little detail or all of this drama that comes in with maybe sitting out a player or, oh my God, he only played 9 minutes tonight or whatever it is going on. You don't get all of that hype like you would in a Edmonton or a Vancouver or a Toronto, like where there are multiple outlets, multiple people trying to find their way through on the media side. So they're going to ask different questions than maybe you're in Florida or in Anaheim or a place like that where there's just less coverage. So I do really think that it is an advantage during the season. But now that you're here, everyone is dissecting your team. Everyone's going to be on top of every little thing that's going on. But I think this is where Paul is at his best. And I don't think there's a better coach in the league who knows how to deliver messaging, can do it very, very serious. He knows about every swear word in the human language and who is just an extremely intelligent man in the same breath.
I guess it's a perfect opportunity to compare and contrast to the market of the newest head coach, Craig Berube, here with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah, it's a pretty traditional hockey market. He's going to be run through the press, I'm sure, quite a lot in terms of questioning. I wonder if he's the guy that you thought would be at the top of the list or how his experience as a player and as a coach is going to make this emphasis on accountability that I think we heard today in his press conference, and if that's going to be what needs to happen and change for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it's an I don't know to me. You really have to know the inner workings of the dressing room and what was going on and what the next coach would need to bring. Sheldon Keefe did one hell of a job there. Multiple 100-point seasons. I know the expectation is to go further in the playoffs. And so I think Craig Berube is an excellent coach. I know Craig a little bit. I like the way he goes about his business. He's raw. You're not going to have to walk away from him wondering about what the messaging was to you. He's going to tell you direct and right to your face. And it's not an F you thing. It's he's going to build a relationship there so that you can have that conversation very, very honestly and direct. The other thing I know about Toronto is I do know Brad Treliving very well. He would have been methodical on this. Like Tree is a methodical guy. He would have left no stone unturned on candidates, on questions asked, on background, all of that. The Toronto Maple Leafs have just an excellent, excellent general manager. And with him hiring Craig, I know that Craig was the right guy.
Yeah, it's a big offseason ahead. That's job number one for the Maple Leafs. They've got hopefully the right head coach in charge. Well, Dallas, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy some time in Dallas. We'll definitely chat with you before the Stanley Cup is awarded.
Yeah, tell Mr. Corte and Mr. Hall back there if I need to throw my suit on and put Elliot and BX in a headlock, let me know. I'm more than glad to do it.
All right. Okay. We will pass that along. I'm sure they're listening. Appreciate it. Right. Enjoy. Thanks so much. Dallas Eakins, former head coach, Edmonton and Anaheim. And yeah, I'm ready to get back in the ring and wrestle these clowns.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into Brubé a little bit more later after our interview with BNS. But yeah, it was pretty simple today. It was just like, yeah, this is how we're going to play. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about it too much. We're not going to belabor the point. We are going to be a team that does this, and it's very simple, and we'll see if Greg Berube can execute on it. But again, it's his difference than what we were just talking about Maurice, where Maurice has this market where he can do his thing. Now Berube is coming from a market mm-hmm. where he could have done his thing a little bit more quietly, out of plain sight. And now that's a different challenge here for Berube as the next coach of the Maple Leafs.
Dallas mentioned that factoid. I believe it was first on 32 Thoughts. I was hearing it with our guys, Elliot and Jeff. But yes, only three head coaches ever in the history of the NHL have won a cup with multiple teams. The most recent one was Scotty Bowman, who did it with multiple teams. Laviolette has made the final with three different teams, but does not have a win with a different team. So there's lots going into this in terms of coaching, terms of storylines, from brand new coaches to super experienced ones. But we'll keep breaking that all down, teeing that up also tomorrow as the Stanley Cup Conference Finals begin.
Yeah, the origin of most hockey factoids, 32 Thoughts.
Yeah. Okay, you want to take a little quick look here at the Conference Finals preview, series prices, and Conn Smythe, because this is all Justin's futures.
Yeah, I mean, let's roll the dice. What interests you the most? And we'll talk about it. Conn Smythe, Stanley Cup odds?
Conn Smythe.
Okay, Conn Smythe's pretty easy now, right? You're just trying to create the one-to-ones to whatever team that you think is going to win the Stanley Cup. It's pretty simple, right? So Connor McDavid, Jake Oettinger, Igor Shesterkin mm-hmm. being at the top of the board.
Currently have a future on all three of those.
Makes
I'm feeling
a lot of
good.
Sense. So you're set up pretty well, but you're a little bit dark on the Florida Panthers who have a great chance to win the Stanley Cup. I believe that, like, you're trying to find a vulnerable favorite, right? Like, McDavid, yeah, he's in a fight here for the points race with Leon Draisaitl. Evan Bouchard's been amazing. Lots of goal scoring for Zach Hyman. Is McDavid the easy layup choice? I'm not really sure. You're looking for a layup choice connected to a team that might win. And frankly, I think that's Alexander Barkov at this moment. I mean, Matthew Tkachuk and Barkov have the shortest odds for the Panthers. And Tkachuk, after the win over Boston, is like, yeah, Barkov's the best player in the world. If the other guy involved in the conversation is telling the media that about Barkov, well, I think that's a pretty good indicator of who's driving the success for the Florida Panthers. So Barkov's getting a little shorter. It's plus 650, plus 700 right now. But I do think he is best positioned to win it. But probably the best bet amongst the Conn Smythe front runners would be Shesterkin. I mean, the Rangers are plus 370 right now to win the Stanley Cup, and Shesterkin's plus 600. There's a pretty big difference mm-hmm. there. And I don't see the Rangers being able to win the Stanley Cup without Shesterkin being great. So I think, 90% of the time, Shesterkin wins it. So you'd rather bet that than the cons or than the Stanley Cup odds of plus 370, at least in my opinion.
Okay, we'll save our series prices and your favorite, which is a cup handoff, to later in the show. But let's give our best bets for tonight's games. Mine's going to come from the Toronto Blue Jays game. They're back in action tonight against the Chicago White Sox. I saw that game yesterday, and I mean, I know the Jays aren't doing well, but the White Sox are real bad. So I'm going to take the Jays to continue this win streak, this hot win streak that they're on. Jays on the run line tonight, plus 120. It's Kikuchi on the mound. And I always feel good about, you know, our guy Kikuchi.
Yeah, always feel good about the Grapefruit League MVP of last year. There is a playoff game on tonight. It involves the Boston Celtics, who are obviously heavy, heavy favorites in their Eastern Conference Finals with the Indiana Pacers. I'm not sure I'm going to lay the full game, but I do like the first half. The Celtics did not just play in a Game 7 the other night in New York. They've been resting. They should be ready to go. I think the Pacers just naturally sag because, yeah, it's hard to repeat what you did in Game 7 in the first round on the road in Boston. Celtics first half line minus 6 is my
favorite. Don't worry that the Celtics have just been fat and happy this whole time, just waiting around, and then Pacers are scrappy.
I mean,
and
maybe
punchy.
Maybe in game two I'll feel that way. Maybe later in the series
Celtics
I can feel that way.
Minus 480 on the money line tonight is just the indicator that they got to get to this championship and win it because it's tough.
Yeah, I just think it's a hard turnaround for the Pacers in game one.
Definitely. We'll get into a little bit of this more, but we'll take a quick break because Ben Nicholson Smith will join us on the other side at the Letters podcast. And of course, Sportsnet.ca got the Blue Jays looking to continue to keep things rolling here against the Chicago White Sox. That'll be up on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7 o'clock. We'll be back with Ben Nicholson Smith after the break.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, for the next 30 minutes ahead of Blue Jays and White Sox. That's a 7 o'clock start here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and across Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1, of course. A night off of NHL hockey as everybody recuperates and tapes up whatever ailments they can, gets back out there for another couple battles ahead. But let's pivot to the Blue Jays, who are in a battle of their own. This is a really important stretch of games for the Blue Jays as they face lower-level opponents. Still, nonetheless, a win is hard to get against anyone. Let's bring in Ben Nicholson-Smith at the Letters and, of course, Sportsnet.ca. BNS, how's it going?
Going great. Good to be talking to you, Ailish, and to you too, Justin.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've been a little bit focused on the NHL Stanley Cup of playoffs, of course, but now we get a rare treat where we can direct all of our attention to those Toronto Blue Jays. And, I mean, it's an important time to be doing so. They're about to start this stretch. They're already in it with the White Sox, but the Tigers and the White Sox again, and then the Pirates. And I think it could be a pivotal time in this Blue Jays season. So, like, what do we need to learn about the Blue Jays throughout these next four series if we're talking sellers, buyers, Stan and Pat, the future of this organization?
Just win, really. I think it's that simple. I don't think we need to necessarily learn any lessons about this team beyond how they perform and what kind of results they get between the lines. If they do that in an ugly fashion and it happens because other teams make errors, so be it. I think that's, you know, this is the time of year where you just kind of take what you can get because they played so poorly to this point. They've hit so poorly. Their bullpen has been so bad. They just need to get wins. So it's definitely achievable against this set of teams. It's a good spot, a rare weak spot in the schedule. Take advantage of it. See what they can do.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because, like, you don't want to pull from the shortest of samples, but it does feel like, you know, big things, future aspirations for this team, futures of superstars, futures of everybody kind of hinge on a moment, which is maybe not, like, completely backwards on how the Blue Jays operate, but kind of backwards when it comes down to baseball. Like, I was going to ask you about, is it too reductive to just be like, yeah, the actual only thing that matters for this group and the future of a lot of people is just wins and losses at this point?
Yeah, I don't think that's too simple. I think that wins and losses determine so much in this game. And it's obviously a sport where there's so many advanced stats, and that's amazing. We can measure someone's swing speed right down to the inch, and that's fun. But yeah, ultimately, the win-loss record will tell you, because you're going to look beyond that. You're going to look at run differential. Health, of course, is massive. Minor league performance, all those different things inform the total picture. But probably the number one ingredient in that is wins and losses. So the Jays, step one, get to 500. You never make the playoffs if you're not 500. Step two, get above 500 and stay there. And then step three would be add. But if step one doesn't happen, it goes the other direction. You sell, it becomes a totally different season. And there's a lot of time before they have to decide. But yeah, step one is just get back to 500.
Okay, so we heard from Ross Atkins just a few days ago. Obviously, it was a long weekend. We didn't have a show. We're back on. And I guess you could take it two ways. Were there any takeaways from Ross Atkins' press conference? And if so, how can the fan base start to, like, ease some of the restlessness I think they're feeling from hearing from Ross Atkins and the potential of where this team might go in the next couple weeks?
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't think that Ross Atkins is easing a lot of restlessness amongst the fan base. And that's probably not going to change until the Blue Jays win a lot of games. So that's what you'd expect, right? In this game, a lot of pressure. If you win, then all of a sudden that eases. Everyone likes the GM. If you don't, the GM's going to face a lot of pressure, and rightfully so, because Ross Atkins has had chances to really build up a really good Blue Jays team. Everyone, including the players, including the front office, expected that this season would be a season where they have a chance to make it back to the playoffs and make up for some of the disappointment that they've had. So I don't think anything he said on the weekend changed that. But yeah, he did say we have to play this thing out and give our players the chance to perform. He said there's a lot of time left. And since then, the Jays have played better. So again, that's where the actions on the field matter more than any words that Ross Atkins says. Ultimately, it's not a question of what he says right now. It's a question of how the team performs. And so far, the last couple games, that's trending in the right direction with a ton of work to go.
So I'm not sure if there's a drop-dead date, but let's say they just can't get back to 500. Like, it's kind of treading water at this point, wins and losses kind of trading back and forth, and just not really making up the meaningful ground that you need to make up if you're going to have this season be productive in any real way. How do you expect it to function after that? Like, I think there will be the expectation there will be changes because, yeah, there's a lot of valuable rental assets to part from, but big decisions may have to be made as well. And if the losses and wins do not, you know, arrive at an appropriate pace and level at this point in the year, like, what are the mechanics there? Like, does Ross start making those decisions? Does it go above his head to Mark Shapiro? Like, how do you expect this to work if it doesn't work here in the short term for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different ways this thing could play out, right? The best case scenario is they win and they start and they become buyers. But in the scenarios that you're talking about where it doesn't go as well, kind of depends how quickly that happens. If it looks like they're in it for a while and then they lose seven in a row starting on July 18th, Ross Atkins is operating that fire sale on July 30th. That's just how it would happen. If they lose 10 in a row starting today, then I don't know, maybe it does go above the GM. Maybe they do have a discussion at that point. If it gets that bad, they're completely out of it. Stranger things have happened, and certainly you'd have to look at it, but you know, they haven't lost 10 in a row. So we'll see. I mean, this is where you just have to play it out. And as much as we want those answers, the most likely thing is that it plays out gradually and slowly, and that we don't get an answer to our satisfaction probably until a couple days before the July 30th trade deadline.
I feel like the Blue Jays are going to be an interesting rumor mill as we continue to head towards the trade deadline. I mean, today, Mark Feinsand of MLB.com was mentioning that an anonymous rival executive had told him that the Blue Jays have had talks to teams about potentially trading first baseman Vladdy Guerrero Jr. and shortstop Bo Bichette before this year's trade deadline, but that maybe some of the asking prices are, quote, ridiculous. This is all going to be a lot of discussion about how Bo and Vlad fit into this team's futures, and obviously a lot of it has to deal with where you're at around the trade deadline. But just the idea of needing to make some big decisions with some major superstars with all of this weight of the next couple weeks and month, and having that maybe be Ross Atkins being the guy to do that. Like, how tricky and complicated is this stretch for Bo and Vlad specifically?
I think it is and it isn't. I mean, for those guys as individuals, let's hope that they're good at tuning out distractions, because you know, this is probably just the beginning, as they're a year and a half away from free agency. For the Blue Jays, you know, there's a lot that goes into this, and I would love to ask that executive a couple of follow-ups, you know, like, were those talks recent? Were those talks serious? Because if they weren't recent and if they weren't serious, then all right. I mean, you know, I've had executives in the game ask me about those guys at various points. Is that an expression of interest? There are a lot of executives. They have a lot of opinions. Mark Feinsand does great work, no question about that. But you know, he's not reporting that they have had recent talks about Bo and Vlad that I'm aware of. So, you know, at that point, here's where the Jays stand. They're trying to win. They're not going to trade Bo today or anytime soon. They're not going to trade Vlad today or anytime soon. If they start to lose and if this season becomes an impossibility for them, they will sell. Now, that means free agents, pending free agents like Yusei Kikuchi, Jimmy Garcia, Justin Turner, Kevin Kiermaier. They'll listen on all of those guys. It probably means that they would at least entertain offers for guys like Bo and Vlad. But then the offer would have to be huge, and it would be tough to align on value. And even if they got good offers, it doesn't mean they would accept them. So I don't think that we're anywhere near, hey, you know, it's time for Bo and Vlad to pack their bags. They're Blue Jays. They're here for now, and they're here for the foreseeable future.
Is there precedent that you can draw from, you know, looking and canvassing around the league where, yeah, you can turn things around in relatively short order? You can go from one era to the next in relatively short order? Or does selling Bo and Vlad, if it comes to that, mean like, yeah, this is a long process because, yeah, we don't know what we're getting back. It could just be a bunch of lottery tickets, right? Like, is there a balance there where you can parlay these pieces into something that resembles a pretty confident next core, or is that just wishful thinking? Like, can that be done, or is it, going with those guys, or going the completely other route where it's, yeah, we'll just have to see and play the long game here?
Great question. A lot of interesting angles we could take there. The short version is you're not going to turn 26-year-old Bowen Vlad into 21-year-old Bowen Vlad. Can't do it. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get prospects that are, I know the Nationals did it with C.J. Abrams and Juan Soto, and that's more the exception than it is the rule. The value that you get back if you were to trade those guys just would not be as splashy as some people think, because only so many teams want to take on that money. And they're only a year and a half away from free agency. So their value is lower as a trade commodity, if you will, than it would have been 3-4 years ago. That's stating the obvious. Doesn't mean that they aren't great players. Doesn't mean that they wouldn't be coveted around the league. But we're not talking about someone who just fits into every roster the way they would have when they were making the league minimum at 22 or 23. So, yeah, I think that for Vladdy, for Bo, these guys are big parts of the future and can be big parts of the Blue Jays. And as for the question of whether the Blue Jays would look to a longer-term reset, I personally don't think they should. And I've had people who are very familiar with the organization's thinking say that that would not happen, that it would not be a long rebuild, that they would try to win in 2025. So my impression from talking to sources is 2025 is a win season for the Blue Jays, that is something they're going to try to do. And honestly, they should try to win. Six teams make the playoffs. Like, it's not like it's that hard to make the playoffs in baseball. Like, you should be trying to win.
All right. Let's focus on something that's been an encouraging little stretch here, because we don't want to think too far ahead, but that has been Alek Manoah. And he's had some really quality performances over the little stretch here, this weekend being one of them. Like, how's the club feeling about his progression? How are you seeing his return into Major League Baseball showing up, not only on the score sheet, but in how he's carrying himself?
Yeah, to me, this is way beyond what I could have reasonably expected from Alek Manoah three starts back. I mean, two of the starts, he's looked like a frontline major league starting pitcher, and he's backed it up with the results. He's been out there 6-7 innings at a time, pitching with a really good, consistent delivery, throwing strikes over and over, attacking with three pitches. These are the things that you want to see from a major league starting pitcher, and he's getting results. He's enjoying it. He's showing some emotion on the mound. That's all great. This is vintage Alek Manoah. And I really didn't think that we were going to see that three starts into his return to the mound. I wasn't sure if we'd ever see it again. I don't think anyone can tell you they were totally sure they would. But here he is. We'll see how long it lasts. It's not easy to sustain, obviously, but good for him. Give him credit for getting to this point.
Jimmy Garcia has been one of the stories for the Toronto Blue Jays this season. Just been lights out, dominant, and surprisingly so in some ways, right? Like, this is a departure from the norm for him. So automatically my brain goes to how is this possible? Do we have a rationale, a reasoning behind this incredible resurgence? Or is it just like, hey, just don't ask questions. Just let Jimmy throw the ball.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. To me, just based off of what I've seen, I would say the fastball plays. He is so confident with that fastball, obviously upper 90s, and he'll throw it to anyone. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, he just attacks. He gets ahead. He's got a sweeper. He's got a curveball. The breaking stuff is obviously good. He's got, to have a couple really good secondaries as a reliever. Not everyone has that. He's good against lefties and righties. I don't know. I mean, I'm talking around the answer here. I don't think there's one simple thing, but he's throwing strikes. He's got great stuff that plays.
I got one last one for you, Ben, before we let you go. So Springer moved down the lineup finally this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and probably I haven't seen the starting lineup tonight, but I assume he's also not leading off. But anyway, why did this decision ultimately take so long? I mean, if you read Blue Jays Twitter and you hear from fans, people were screaming from the top of the mountains in the CN Tower to have this happen. And now that it has happened, how is George Springer feeling about it? I think we were cautious and worried about it affecting the morale. Walk us through this whole situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's the right call for him to be out of that leadoff spot. And Davis Schneider is hitting, as you know, many anticipated that he would, because Davis Schneider has really done nothing but hit since he's been in the major leagues. He's just a hotter hitter, a better hitter right now than George Springer, or really than anyone on the Jays. So that's a great spot for him to be. To me, it took too long. So I'm not going to sit here and defend that decision. I don't agree with it. I've said that for weeks now. I thought that Springer should have been bumped. Again, not for any reason other than the production, right? It's just, it's a meritocracy. It should be a meritocracy. And I think that now they're in a position where they can do a bit more tinkering. We saw Danny Jansen hit second. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he's going to hit second for the rest of the year, but you move Jansen second, Schneider first. Vladdy's obviously hitting. He'll stay up there. Varsho's hot. He'll go up there. If Turner gets hot again, he'll go up there. Bo, obviously, you just keep the guys who are healthy, who are swinging the bat well. You put them at the top of the order, and you don't worry too much about it, and you don't get stuck in something. This is, I think, with Springer, they got stuck. I don't know why. I don't think it helped them. And here they are in a better spot, but it took them a little bit of time to get there.
Yeah. Okay, well, onwards and upwards. Big win for the Blue Jays, looking to continue this red-hot winning streak that they're on. BNS, we appreciate your time tonight. Great to get some Blue Jays chat going on the fan pregame. We'll definitely talk with you soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Ben Nicholson-Smith at the letters, and, of course, sportsnet.ca, Jays and White Sox, 7 o'clock. And, yes, it is not George Springer on the leadoff spot once again. But that felt like, you know, that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and 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 over again. And it was time.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, maybe Blair and Barker know more when they talk about, like, the inner workings of, like, the vibe and the chemistry. And was that going to upset the apple cart?
Yeah, you could upset an apple cart.
See, that doesn't really make much sense to me. But nonetheless, it's happened. They need to win games, so you just need to put your players in the best position to win games.
Yeah,
and that's what's happening.
And I think that particularly bothersome to fans of the Toronto Blue Jays, because it's like a vanity thing, right?
It's like you didn't want it to feel like it was.
I want to be batting first, and I want to chase,
or I won't be happy,
and extend my, you know, leadoff home run place in the history of Major League Baseball. And really, that stuff matters extremely little to people that care about the Toronto Blue Jays and wins and losses when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. So yeah, that stuff is just never going to play. And you'd think, you know, a professional athlete would recognize that. And again, I don't know if George Springer's banging on the table demanding this, but it definitely took them a long time to get them to that point. Yeah. And that is just, you're never going to win over the fans when that is the background to all this vanity stuff, where it's about you and not anyone else. That's just never going to fly.
All right. Blue Jays looking to continue some wins here against the White Sox. That's up next after us on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But before we get everyone set for the Blue Jays game, let's wrap up with some of our thoughts on the Berube.
Speaking of me stuff.
What?
It feels like Craig Berube will be trying to rid
Maple Leafs. You were about to say that he was like that. I was
Did we watch
the same press conference?
No, not at
that
all.
That guy is straight business. Like, he is an intimidating presence. And I just felt when I watched that, I mean, he's not a man of many words. And it was so funny. I was going to text Sam, and then I saw Sam's tweet, Sam of Real Kipper and Born, where he's like, no more Kippers Clippers this year, because he's just short and sweet, but not really sweet. He's to the point and no nonsense, says what he wants to say and doesn't ramble on and doesn't do it for the media. And that's going to be hard maybe for the writers and for the broadcasters that cover the Toronto Maple Leafs, because it's not a lot to go on. But I think that just shows the type of guy he is. It's like actions, accountability. And I know we're trying to read a lot into a 30-minute press conference, but I'm inspired, because it feels different to watch the way he commands a room and talks to those around him.
Yeah, he, like Paul Maurice, might know all the swear words, but I don't think he uses them as eloquently and as strategic as Paul Maurice. Because, yeah, he is a man of fewer words than, I guess, what we're accustomed to. But, yeah, those words do carry some meaning. And, again, he's going to have to show that he can change the DNA of this group. But I did love, like, those two being Berube and Treliving, are really, really stressing the importance of team, like that you need everybody, that everybody has to have a role. And I guess if you're a part of everything and you feel like you don't have a meaningful role, that is disenfranchising in many, many ways. So I feel like the one way they really want to change, or the one way they believe they can change the DNA and therefore the results, would be just empowering everyone and having relationships with everyone and definitely communicating what the expectations are. And I think this is no fault of Sheldon Keefe, at least I don't think, at least I don't know, is that, yeah, it kind of was a follow the leader vibe with the Maple Leafs and has been for the last 5-10 years where it's, yeah, there's the haves and have-nots. And the have-nots are just there to, like, kind of fill out whatever function is needed while the rest of the four or five just determine the result of the game or the series or the season. And I think that's what they're trying to get to the bottom of. That's the root cause, they believe, I think, of the issue. And if they can empower everyone in the same way that, yeah, I think Vancouver's gotten that sort of thing going on or had that thing
Dallas.
Going on this year, then maybe things can change. So, yeah, I think you have to be encouraged if you're a Maple Leaf fan just because they are speaking things that are serious and clear issues into existence. We'll see if they can deliver on that. But you want them talking about it, and they're definitely talking about fixing some of the things that clearly availed this team.
I thought it was awesome. I forget who brought it up, which reporter asked, but the Shanahan and Berube fight back in the day. This is like, I think that's great. I don't think it matters at all, but it's just interesting that one head coach beat the brakes off the president.
They had a long conversation about after the fight, too. I wonder what they were talking about. I'm going to hire you one day.
They totally
I don't think that was part of the
dialogue. What a funny moment. That's been circulating online if you haven't seen it on Twitter. Berube and Shanahan obviously played during the same time, and they got in a fight, and Berube he took it to Shanny, and Shanny was asked about it, and he kind of laughed and said, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. But anyway, those guys are, you know, I'm sure there's a respect level. There's the knowing of playing the game. Not that the Maple Leafs, that they've tried that before. It hasn't always worked. But I think there's something about Berube being a former Maple Leaf, being a guy that, like, commands respect and puts the effort in, is a guy that works really, really hard. And I think that that's going to be interesting for some of the different players on the Maple Leafs, and also probably more challenging for them. I think he's not going to allow people to just go through the motions or to take shortcuts, because I don't think he's that type of person when he was a player, and he's certainly not that way when he was a coach. So I just think it's a different vibe right now.
Yeah, but and again, I think they were very quick to highlight that this isn't going to be the goon squad all of a sudden, Toronto Maple Leafs. and he talked about that. Like, the game has changed, and it's not about, hey, just because the guys who run this team fought each other or the clip went viral, and yeah, there's some merit to what they did, that's not what they're trying to build. I mean, we heard things like competitive, structured. We talked about universal importance, heavy, fast. Like, you kind of just, it's taking a page out of what Treliving's been talking about, but was unable to actually put into practice because, yeah, he took over the team late and wasn't able to make the change that they wanted. We kind of know now what the Maple Leafs want to do. It's not all that complicated. They want to play kind of like Vegas has been playing and kind of like Dallas. And like Edmonton
has switched
to. Well,
they better use some LTIR then.
They might have to dip into the LTIR. But there was a couple things that I wish we got a time to decode with Dallas Eakins. Mm. He said playing predictable and north. And I know what north means, right? Like, you're going north-south instead of east-west.
I think
east-west
you're right about
is
that.
An issue. But what does playing predictable mean? I wonder what that...
Like simplifying your game?
Is it simplifying the game, or is it just doing things over and over and over again the same exact way over and over and over again? And I guess that could be deemed as, like, somewhat boring, like regular seasons where it's just over and over and over again. I'm not really sure, like, that's what fans are going to be craving in December.
They'll be craving it when they're in the conference final.
That's the stuff that works when it's...
Yeah.
When you're in the more meaningful moments where you can just rely on every shift looking like the last. And I think that's kind of where the Maple Leafs have gotten in trouble, where every shift doesn't look like the last because they've got different types of players that do certain things well and other things not well at all. Just more uniformity. I think that's the thing that Berube was trying to impart during his press conference today.
Okay, we got 1 minute left. I'm worried that PWHL Toronto has the Toronto curse, as they were... Mm. Reverse swept. Oh, no.
Kind of like your bank account, reverse swept.
Yeah, this has been tough. It was a great season watching PWHL Toronto here, but, I mean, they blew it. It's hard not to say it. They were the best team. They dropped the ball, folks. But you got PWHL Boston and Minnesota going for the first ever Walter Cup. We got game two tonight. But it was a tough watch to see them blow that one. And now all the parallels and everyone tweeting that PWHL Toronto, PWHL or Maple Leafs handshake emoji. I'm like, I know. Let us have one good thing. And we didn't.
Listen, we still got friend of the program, Taylor Heise, in the final.
9-1.
I'm on the side of Minnesota.
All right. I don't even know.
Are you picking? You had Toronto and Montreal. Can you have a third team?
No. I think I'm just sitting this one out and being a fan.
That's fair.
All right, that's it for us on the Fan pregame. We'll see you tomorrow with Stanley Cup playoff action returning.